time is 6 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland. Up next, Occupy Radio's The Occupant.
KBOO wants you. Yes, you. Are you excited about the new possibilities for local independent media? Are you ready to help KBOO reach out and grow stronger in the community? We're looking for candidates for KBOO's board of directors, and we've extended our search through July 31st. So if you'd like to share your skills with the people who share your values, download a copy of our board candidate package at kboo.fm. Or you can pick up a copy at the station during business hours. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. Applications must be received by 5 p.m. July 31st, so don't delay. And we look forward to seeing more of you at KBOO.
We're now approaching Newport, Rhode Island.
KBOO and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present one of the great concert films of all time, Jazz on a Summer's Day. A documentary of the 1958 Newport Jazz Festival, Jazz on a Summer's Day captures the music, the crowd, and the essence of such jazz greats as Louis Armstrong, Thelonious Monk, Jerry Mulligan, and Anita O'Day. Jazz on a Summer's Day, Thursday, August 14, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Old Rockin' Chair's got me.
Old Rockin' Chair got your father.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
I'm here with David Rovics, and we are in David's home. Hello, David.
Hello, Jimmy.
It's good to see you. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
We are here today to talk about David's music, and I also wanted to kind of spend a little time making sure that our listeners know sort of your, I guess, for lack of a better term, your business model and how you make your living and what you do spreading your music around and just kind of how that goes.
Yeah.
Our listeners will be interested to know that, of course, all of your songs are available for free download on the internet, and mm-hmm. that is sort of the model that you go by, that people can donate what they will. That's an interesting way to approach getting your music out there.
Yeah, and basic model is that actually that people donate what they will, which is usually nothing. But basically, the internet is like a vehicle for getting the music out there, and then I get paid to play the shows. That's the thing. You make money on touring. You charge for gigs. You charge for at the door for people to come in, but you give away all the music online. Which is basically like radio play that we have been locked out of, we independent musicians, not even just political ones, since about 1980 or so.
Uh-huh. Has that been your model from the very beginning?
Yep, that's pretty much been it since the beginning. At the very beginning of MP3s, I only had clips and pieces and stuff like that on online, partly because of just the bandwidth limitations that people had long before broadband and stuff, but then as you know, as it's become more of a normal thing, like I think I first put up everything for free download maybe around 2000 or something like that, and in the 90s I had like, you know, pieces of things, but pretty much it's been my model forever.
And so I know at least on your website, the first album that you have listed there was 1999.
Yeah. Yeah, I recorded stuff before that, but the first album of all original material that I would care to sort of mention was released in 99, recorded in 98. Yeah, We Just Want the World.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so you're doing just about an album a year?
Yeah, pretty much a physical album every year since then, but usually online I've been releasing more like two or three albums a year.
Uh-huh.
Two full albums a year, including online stuff that doesn't make it onto a physical CD.
And you've just released a new album.
Yeah, All the News That's Fit to Sing.
Yeah, let's go to the title song from that album, All the News That's Fit to Sing, and we'll take a listen to that.
There's a war on for your mind, it's right there on your screen. Watch the pundits ramble on to find the turn and set the scene. Hear the pundits say this is the best that it can get. There may be room for improvement. Just stay tuned to your set, just stay tuned to your set. They'll tell you all you need to know. If it's anything important, they'll have it on the show. There's a war on for the planet, there's a war on for your mind. The outcome of the struggle is the fate of humankind. You can drink Kool-Aid, buy the goods that you are sold. Watch the talking heads, think the way you're told. Think the way they tell you, hold fast to the lies. Or stick your finger in the wind and trust your ears and eyes. Turn off your TV or you won't learn a thing. Gather round, I'll give you all the news that's fit to sing. Gather round, I'll give you all the news that's fit to sing. Some democracies are tyrannies, you can hear them say. While some dictatorships are friendly, they'll tell us every day. If your passion is pro baseball, you can surely get the score. But if you want to know what's happening, walk outside your door. See the oil train exploding, see the black smoke in the sky. See the kids under the bridge, see the limo passing by. Turn off your TV or you won't learn a thing. Gather round, I'll give you all the news that's fit to sing. Gather round, I'll give you all the news that's fit to sing. It's a question for the moment, a question for the ages, for the businessmen and prisoners rattling their cages. For the businessmen and prisoners, be they lost or found, upon the rising oceans or cracked dry desert ground. It's a choice that we're all faced with, or so it seems to me. I don't have all the answers, but I can guarantee. Turn off your TV or you won't learn a thing. Gather round, I'll give you all the news that's fit to sing. Turn off your TV or you won't learn a thing. Gather round, I'll give you all the news that's fit to sing. Gather round, I'll give you all the news that's fit to sing.
So that was All the News That's Fit to Sing, the title song from the mm-hmm. album All the News That's Fit to Sing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, we were talking about your model is to put the music out there in lieu of radio time, spread it out on the internet, give it away for free so that people become exposed to your music. And then it's the shows that are really where you make your living. And and I had the chance to be at a house show about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really enjoyed myself. I think you're a really talented performer, which I'm sure you've heard all this before, but just the way that you connect with a room full of people, the quality of your musicianship, the songwriting, I really enjoy the way that you kind of walk that balance between serious subject matter that's presented with music that kind of sort of softens the edges of it, where you can kind of take in what you're actually saying and process it, and it sort of sticks with you a little bit, the melody and the music.
Yeah, music, the thing about music is that when you, there's been actually a recent study I read about some scientists were studying the brain and how it responds to different things, and they found that when you sing words, they go straight to the emotional center of the brain rather than a totally different response to words that are spoken. So that was interesting.
Uh-huh.
And I think, music does a whole different thing than just talking. You know, it does a whole different thing to people's brains. And then, of course, when you intersperse funny songs with the serious songs, then that's also a really important technique, because you can't do two or three, and you can't do three depressing ballads in a row. You can do two, but not three.
And then you got to break it up just a little bit so that people can breathe.
You know, people need to be able to breathe, exactly.
All right. So another song that kind of is a little more in the lighter vein, if only it were true. And I've got a recording from the show that we were talking about, the house show.
Mm-hmm.
We'll play that and the bicycle song, which is downloaded from your website, davidrovics.com, mm-hmm. where you can find, of course, all of David's material is available for, again, free for download or streaming. So we'll go play both of those songs, and then we'll come back.
If you've heard this stuff before, then you are very welcome to sing along. Even if you haven't, you can just try anyway. As long as we have Obama in the White House, I have to do this song because the shelf life is going to expire, you know. I turned on my TV, though it was hard to see these men who would be head of state. What a great country, from sea to shining sea, we watched the Republicans debate. Newt stood with his third wife and said, "You bet your life the president is a red. Wants to tax the rich a lot, take your limo and your yacht. He wants to have the bankers' heads. And if he gets in again, he'll paint the White House pink, and then he'll hire Chavez as his VP. Then we'll be right on track to give capitalism the sack, along with the insurance industry. If only it were true, if only it were true, I'd be so happy. If were true, if only it were true, if only it were true. He'll give everyone food stamps and wheelchair ramps. He'll subsidize windmills and maple syrup. He'll cripple industries with eco-friendly policies, and pretty soon we will be just like Europe. He'll shut down oil wells, give out solar cells to every home in Delaware and Illinois. He'll ban logging in the parks. He'll send the works of Karl Marx to the homes of every American girl and boy. He'll abolish pesticides. He'll be giving out free rides and free lunches too in his high-speed trains. He'll start lots of public works full of union perks. He'll fill all the cities up with bicycle lanes. If only it were true, if only it were true, I'd be so happy. Wouldn't you? If only it were true, if only it were true, if only it were true. Watch out, his critics tell, this shall be our death knell. He'll pull the troops out and end all of our wars. He'll gut military spending, our empire will be ending, and soon we'll be invaded by the Moors. He'll legalize all drugs, give away beer mugs and hookahs to every child and Korans. He'll ban religions from the schools, give 40 acres and a mule to every person who makes less than 50 grand. He'll close Guantanamo, to torture he'll say no. He'll make us all drive electric cars. He'll reinstate the fairness doctrine, take off that black bin, and he'll put Rupert Murdoch behind bars. If only it were true, if only it were true, I'd be so happy, wouldn't you? If only it were true, if only it were true, if only it were true. If only it were true, if only it were true, I'd be so happy, wouldn't you? If only it were true, if only it were true, if only it were true.
Thank you. everybody's wondering what they're gonna do. Everything's a mess and folks are feeling blue. If your troubles got you down so much you can't abide, get on that bicycle and ride. Yeah, get on that bicycle and ride. Neath the sunny skies or along the ocean side, just ride, 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 ride. They're doing it in Eugene, Havana, and Shanghai. Even folks in Boston town are giving it a try, throwing out their gas tanks, the clean air by their side. Just get on that bicycle and ride. Yeah, get on that bicycle and ride. Neath the sunny skies or along the ocean side, just ride, 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 ride. It's good for your heart and it's good for your brain. When those fluorescent lights are driving you insane, your toes will tingle in your shoes when to the pedal they reply. Just get on that bicycle and ride. Yeah, get on that bicycle and ride. Neath the sunny skies or along the ocean side, just ride, ride, ride. You're having troubles with your lovers, the tandem's made for that. You'll work together wonderfully or else you'll just go splat. Gonna shut down Main Street, make the bike paths far and wide, and get on that bicycle and ride. Yeah, get on that bicycle and ride. Neath the sunny skies or along the ocean side, just ride, 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 ride.
So that was If Only It Were True, recorded in a local house show, and the bicycle song. You also have a children's album that you did. Was it done as an album or just separate songs?
Yeah, I did. Actually, I recorded two children's albums, but I only pressed one of them into CDs, and the other is only available on as a download. But yeah, after I had a kid 8 years ago, I went for 2 years without writing anything for adults, pretty much. Maybe one or two exceptions, but pretty much like my brain was just oriented around babies and kids, and so that's all I was writing about. And I was a little worried, you know. I thought maybe I'd just stop writing for adults altogether, and which might have been okay, except that I didn't hardly have any gigs playing for kids, so you know, I would have had to really develop a new business model, you know. But I wrote the two songs for the two CDs, and then I started writing for adults again after that.
Well, let's listen to Fly Around the World. Mm-hmm. And then we'll come back and we'll start to get into a little bit more serious stuff.
Very good.
We're gonna fly off to Norway, play on the mountains of snow, ski on down the mountainsides with those Norwegians, don't you know? Next stop, we're going to Grand Prairie to watch the horses dance dressage. Gonna eat baguettes and stinky cheese, which they call fromage. Go visit my friend Mamu in the land called Palestine, where the cities are made of tunnels and the olives are big and green. We're gonna go to the airport, we're gonna get in a plane, fly around the world and come right back again. Go next door to Lebanon, where the mountains meet the sea. We can eat some hummus and pita bread, climb on a cedar tree, take a jaunt to Kenya, have a big old laugh when we're running around with the wildebeest, a pair of zebras and a giraffe. We're gonna go to the airport, we're gonna get in a plane, the ocean beneath the skies of blue. Pretty soon we'll be in the land of Oz, jumping with a kangaroo. We're gonna go to the airport, we're gonna get in a plane, cause it's nice to be back there. Can't just spend your whole life flying in the air. Fly back to Portland, see all of our good friends, see what kind of adventures await us around the bend. We're gonna go to the airport, we're gonna get in a plane, fly around the world and come right back again. We're gonna go to the airport, we're gonna get in a plane, fly around the world and come right back again.
So that was Fly Around the World, which is one of the tracks from the children's albums that you have recorded. Tell me about East Tennessee.
A friend of mine in East Tennessee in Knoxville, Chris Irwin, who is a wonderful guy who's an environmental lawyer now and has been for, I think, his entire adult life, been an activist around mainly environmental issues, especially mountaintop removal. He sent me an article from a newspaper from 1968 about somebody, unknown person, who blew up a whole bunch of mining equipment. And then a month later, somebody, same person or not, who knows, in eastern Kentucky, blew up a whole bunch of mining equipment. And that was it. Then these acts of domestic terrorism stopped. But both actions were very impressive and did a lot of damage. And so basically, I just wrote the song based on that newspaper article. And of course, basically, you know, we had to make up the details. I mean, I talked with Chris about who he thought the person might have been, because obviously we don't know. We don't know if it's a man or a woman or whatever. But both of our best guesses was that it was somebody from the area. Probably a man, probably a veteran of the Vietnam War, who had learned how to use serious explosives, and I just thought, yeah, he might have just come back. I mean, it was 68, so he, you know, quite likely he went off to fight, came back from Vietnam, saw that the coal companies had completely ravaged the neighborhood he grew up in, and thought, oh, this is not good, and he took the law into his own hands, so to speak, and then I guess that he must have left town because they would have been looking for him. And where do people go when they leave town? You know, usually to the west. So I figured he probably ended up in California. So I made up the details, basically. But it's about stuff that really happened.
That's East Tennessee. We'll listen to that now, and then we'll come back and talk a little more.
I grew up on this mountain, have a family, plant some corn and dig a well. I was all done with the army, back from Vietnam, where I learned how to hold a rifle and had a set of bomb. I grew up on this mountain, it's in my very soul. So when the company moved next door, started digging for the coal, tearing up the mountain with drillers and drag lines. I knew then what needed to happen to those mines. 10, 9, 8, sometimes that's just how it goes. 3, 2, 1, yeah, before it blows. On the ground, stayed well out of sight. I tied sticks to the equipment, set the timer on, and I knew that in 10 seconds those dozers would be gone. 10, 9, 8, sometimes that's just how it goes. 3, 2, 1, get out before it blows. And I figured I did my small part to make the world free. In my humble manner, in East Tennessee. 10, 9, 8, sometimes that's just how it goes. 3, 2, 1, get out before it blows.
So that was East Tennessee, a song about a strong action against mountaintop removal and other mining activities that were going on in East Tennessee and Kentucky in 1968. Like you mentioned earlier, some of those details are let's say, expository.
Yes, that's the word.
You're hoping that they're correct, and there's a chance that they may be, but it was, I think the song really is less about the details and more about, again, the fact that, you know, this was probably, most likely, someone's home. They'd probably grown up in those woods, playing in those rivers, and came back from a foreign war of conquest, let's be honest, in Vietnam, and found that the conquest had come home to roost.
Yeah.
And took matters into their own hands. No one was killed in any of these. It was strictly property damage that was done.
No one killed or injured. Yeah.
So that brings us to the next song I want to play, Oil Train. And I bring that song into the mix here today. I'm going to play a version that you played at the house show that I was at recently, which, again, I want to just remind our viewers, I'm Jimmy Tardy. This is The Occupant. I'm here in David Rovick's home. He was nice enough to invite me into his home and let me talk with him to share with you his music and some of his thoughts about his music. And Oil Train, we're bringing that into the mix today because of the connection with the Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods and their call for Governor John Kitzhaber to institute a moratorium on oil trains coming through their neighborhoods. And if I understand the geography correctly, that includes the railroad tracks that are kind of down there by the Lloyd Center and the now the Moda Center. So those are an important set of railroad tracks. Mm-hmm. And it's important that we understand that right here in our town, our very city, we are having the exact same trains run through with the exact same product in them as exploded in Quebec a little over a year ago and killed nearly 50 people in a fireball explosion with incredibly volatile fossil fuel loaded in those train cars when the train jumped the tracks and basically leveled the core of that town.
Yeah. So, we got the oil trains coming through. There's an oil boom. Prairies are on fire. Shale gas. All the fuel you might desire coming out so fast. No time to lay pipeline. Eurekaville. It's like the days of 49, except this time they're using massive rigs that poison everything more thoroughly. The deeper that it digs, trains a mile long. Load it up in rail cars, send them west, send them east. Past cafe schools and late night bars, there's an oil train coming through your town. There were dangers. They knew it from the start, but they were minimal. They said everyone must play their part and risk the destruction of their cities. Each time a train rolls by, hope it won't derail, detonate sky high. There's an accident each day somewhere, but we're not supposed to fear that it could happen here. Listen closely. Do you hear that whistle blow? Look out the window. Do you see the fire glow? There's an oil train coming through your town. It was after midnight, a Saturday night. A resident called, and that rail car was alight with that much gas. Sitting by the lake, it was no one's job to watch the car that maintained the brake on 73 massive. Tanks of fracking gas down the hill, gaining speed as they rolled past. Now at the music cafe that once was on Rue Frontenac, there are 50 customers and employees who won't be coming back. There's an oil train coming through your town. There's an oil train coming through your town.
And you were saying earlier, the market can point out all of its efficiencies that it wants to, but the fact of the matter is that the market is destroying itself, because the natural resources market requires two things. It requires natural resources that can get to places, and it requires human beings. And those natural resources are actively exploding and killing human beings in dramatic fashion, and in the longer term, very slowly, poisoning us all.
Absolutely. I mean, if the answer is transporting fracking oil via pipeline or transporting it via trains that are going through the center of towns or throughout the U.S. and Canada, then the question is the wrong question. I mean, you know, if this is the answer, it's not the answer. This is not the answer to anything. You know, the answer to survival of our species mandates unequivocally that all that gas and all that oil and all that coal has to stay in the ground, and that we have to use renewable energy and massively reduce our demand for energy if our species is going to survive. There's no argument about that from a scientific basis. And science, in this case, is all that matters. Politics is completely irrelevant. You know, we absolutely must keep the carbon level in the atmosphere below what it is now if we're going to survive. There's no question about that. So, you know, all this politics, all this stuff about energy independence, it's all just a bunch of nonsense, you know. That oil and that coal and the gas has to stay in the ground, and there's no safe way to transport it. And even if there were a safe way to transport it, using that stuff mandates our death as a species, which is crazy, absolutely insane.
Let me engage in a little of my pet advocacy here. It's not just the carbon dioxide that is emitted into the atmosphere when fossil fuels are burned. It's everything else that's associated with that those petroleum products. They're manufacturing a host of chemistry, and all of that is ending up right in the environment, and we are bathed in it every day.
We're drinking it, we're breathing it, we're getting lung cancer from it, we're getting stomach cancer from it, bladder cancer. We're dying from having this stuff around, regardless of what it's doing to the climate change.
The climate change issue gets a lot of press.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's part of the, I think, the strategy that the fossil fuel industry has taken is to focus only on carbon dioxide and global warming. And that's a very good strategy for them, but it's a bad strategy for us because it leaves out all of these other chemicals that are part of the picture. And you can just start rattling off pretty much any chemical that you want that is dangerous to human beings, and they trace back to this petroleum economy. All of these chemicals are for the vast majority of them, are being synthesized from petroleum products.
If people don't care about all the other aspects of the effects to their health and to the environment of all these chemicals, one thing that is perhaps convincing for at least the male half of our species is that dioxin, which is a byproduct of petroleum production and is all over our water supply, dioxin causes the shrinking of our genitalia. So over the generations. So, you know, if you have an attachment to that particular organ that lots of guys are happy they have, well, you know, it's not going to be, it's actually gotten to the point with amphibians, because they're so much more affected by what's in the water, that they are physically having problems reproducing, because, so many amphibians are either being born without their male genitalia, or they're being born with male genitalia that's so small that they can't physically reproduce. And I'm sure there's lots of guys out there who don't want their gender to face such a eventuality, which is right around the corner if we don't get a handle on the situation.
This is The Occupant. I'm your host, Jimmy Tardy. I'm speaking with David Rovics. We're in David's home. We're talking about his music and his business model, which is basically built on giving away all of his music for free in hopes that you'll take advantage of the opportunity to have David come and play an intimate show, maybe even in your own home, your backyard, or a small setting where David can connect with you with his words and his music, but also just as a human being present. And we have a couple of songs I want to play from that house show that I've mentioned before, where that's where I really became a fan of what you do, David. That atmosphere that gets created in that intimate type of setting takes it to another level. And so we're going to play a couple of songs from that. We're going to play I'm a Better Anarchist, If I Had a Hammer. We have some commentary about your research and some problems that you had when you were researching Sheriff Joe Arpaio of Arizona. And we'll also play the song Riot Dog. So we'll take a musical interlude break here, and we'll come back and talk a little more.
Very good. Well, living here in Portland, and, you know, basically, you know, living anywhere in the U.S., if you've been around for ever, you know, you probably noticed at some point that one of the biggest problems that the left has always faced is itself. And I mean, as if the system and the cops and the media isn't bad enough, we have to have our own problems, you know. I don't drive a car because they run on gas, but if I did, it'd run on biomass. I ride a bike or sometimes a skateboard. So f*** all you drivers and your yuppie hordes sitting all day in the traffic queues. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't eat meat, I just live on moldy chives or the donuts that I found in last week's dumpster dive. Look at you people in that restaurant, I think you are so sad when you could have been eating bagels like the ones that I just had. I think it is a shame all the bourgeois things you do. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't wear leather and I like my clothes in black, and I made a really cool hammock from a moldy coffee sack. I like to hop on freight trains, I think that is so cool. It's so much funner doing this than being stuck in school. I can't believe you're wearing those brand new shiny shoes. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't have sex, and there will be no sequel, because heterosexual relationships are inherently unequal. I'll just keep on moshing to anti-flag and crass until there are no differences in gender, race, or class. All you brainwashed breeders, you just haven't got a clue. I'm a better anarchist than you. I don't believe in leaders, I think consensus is the key. I don't believe in stupid notions like representative democracy. Whether or not it works, I know it is the case that only direct action can save the human race. So when I see you in your voting booth, then I know it's true. I'm a better anarchist than you. I am not a pacifist, I like throwing bricks. And when the cops have caught me and I've taken a few licks, I always feel lucky if I get a bloody nose, because I feel so militant and everybody knows. By the time the riot is all through, I'm a better anarchist than you. I'm a better anarchist than you. I was on my way into Australia, and it was actually the same guy called me up and said, we've got a trial going on here and we need a song for it. And I wrote this song for Graham Dunstan in Brisbane. I watched it on the TV. Machine guns fire towards the ground. I watched the people run. Helicopter gunship strafing the street. I watched them lining up the bodies in the Baghdad heat. They say these leaks had consequences, and I must agree. When I saw them fire on the children, it affected me. I thought, what if I were wearing the other shoe? If I had a hammer, what would I do? I am just a person like anyone. I am just another mother's son. I have no special powers, I cannot fly. Not like that helicopter gunship up in the sky, sending all those bullets all around to the journalists and children on the ground. I am just one man, that's very true. But if I had a hammer, what would I do? Mm-hmm.
I try to wonder, why should I care? Well, then the answer seems so obvious. There are people down there. And right here in Queensland, there's an army base. And there's a helicopter gunship just sitting in place. There's a time for watching. There's a time to act. It's just gonna kill more children if it remains intact. I am just one person, but you are too. And if you had a hammer, what would you do? If you had a hammer, what would you do?
Singing at this little festival in France last summer, and I—that's the thing—is you know you can't rely on a songwriter really, because you know you just we do just enough research to write a good convincing song and make it seem like we were there, but like actually I'm not an expert on any of these subjects.
There's Wikipedia.
But yeah, Wikipedia, you know, and Wikipedia can be dangerous. I was working on a song about Sheriff Joe Arpaio, you know, in Arizona. And I almost wrote the song based on the mistaken idea that his middle name is Mussolini, which it is not. But it's Joe M. Arpaio, and on Wikipedia it said that the M stood for Mussolini, and I thought, that is just too perfect. An Italian-American fascist with the middle name of Mussolini? You know, that's like, what a gift to songwriters. And it was not true, you know. It's Michael, Joe Michael. You know. So that's much less... You know, I wish it were Mussolini. That would be incredible. But, you know... Basically, you know, Greece with the... With the economic situation and all that, there's been lots and lots of protests and riots and all sorts of things. And every few weeks, they go and burn down all the banks. And they're all the banks, if you go to downtown Athens, you'll see they're all sort of encrusted in this sort of like, you know, they replace the windows, but then around the banks, it'll be this sort of like, you know, black creosote, you know. Thank you. And but, you know, most of the time, people are just hanging out in the parks and playing bouzoukis and chilling out and having a good time. And then every now and then they go burn down all the banks. And so, you know, so basically there's riot police everywhere in Athens. And what you'll notice when the riot police do something, like basically like walk into the parks in large groups and displace people who are hanging out playing bouzoukis. So you see that you'll see the police walk into the parks and they suddenly, they get confronted by, you know, the people who are in the parks, and suddenly you realize there's dogs everywhere. There's stray dogs everywhere. And because suddenly they get up off the ground and they line up in front of the cops and they start barking. And they snarling and growling and you know, looking really mean. And then the police will advance and the people and the dogs will back up and the dogs will growl some more. And then, so then the eventually, you know, the police start firing tear gas. The people run to the other side of the tear gas cloud, as, you know, you tend to do. And so then, you know, people will start, you know, throwing bottles and the dogs will bark from that, you know. And I think the general consensus is the dogs would also be throwing bottles if they had opposable thumbs. But so you got the situation, the sort of standoff kind of thing. And then typically there's one dog in the middle of the tear gas cloud who is just standing there barking at the cops. And so, you know, people started wondering about this one dog, like, why? I mean, how? I mean, you know, because it's tear gas, you know, but the dog seemed to be completely unaffected. And so people were wondering, like, okay, so is the deal that this dog is just so left-wing and so militant that he just can't bear the thought of running from the police? Or, you know, perhaps, as some Greek biologists, you know, put out there, perhaps he's an example of a genetically superior, you know, breed of dog who has developed an immunity to tear gas, which, you know, which would be very advantageous sort of, you know, evolutionary development for a Greek dog. But nobody knows. He's been spayed, so we can't actually find out. We can't study future generations and see if they're also immune to tear gas.
Was there a picture of that dog making the rounds on the internet?
Oh, yeah, lots of them. In fact, In fact, you can go to BBC's website and see a 10-minute montage of Lukanikos riot footage. You know?
Do you have a name for the dog?
Oh, yeah, the Greek dog is Lukanikos, which means sausage, you know, and I tried to find him. I tried to find him several times when I was in Greece, and I failed. So, because not only are there, like, so many left-wing militant dogs all over the place, but they're, like, medium, almost all of them are medium-sized orange and wearing red bandanas. So, I had no luck trying to tell them apart, but...
Oh, we need that in America.
Oh, yeah.
More. Teaching our dogs to do that.
More left-wing dogs. Lots of folks are revolting. They've had enough of this. The rich are getting richer. They're saying that's it. But with Luke, it's different. That's clear as he emerges from the fog. Let's hear it for Lukanikos, the riot dog. It's a fight between people, and he is no pawn. He knows exactly which side he's on. In the machine of capital, he is no cog. Let's hear it for Lukanikos, the riot dog. When a smoke bomb comes towards him, he kicks it back at the buzz. He acts a bit different than a normal dog does. Facebook, but he's got no time for a blog. Let's hear it for Lukanikos, the riot dog. Let's hear it for Lukanikos, the riot dog. I'll do one more, and thanks so much for having me, and thanks for coming, and thanks to Brian and Becky. And if you haven't contributed, or if you have more to contribute to get somebody to go to the VFP convention, plane tickets are expensive.
So those were a couple of songs from a recent house show that David played that I was lucky enough to attend. You heard I'm a Better Anarchist, If I Had a Hammer, and Riot Dog, along with some commentary about the use of Wikipedia and the dangers of being a songwriter and doing just enough research.
Yeah.
Joe Mussolini Arpaio would have just been perfect.
Yeah, it would have been just too perfect. Yeah.
So, again, this is The Occupant. I'm Jimmy Tardy. We're talking with David Rovics here in his home about his business model, such as it is, and how you can access his music and your new album, All the News That's Fit to Sing.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank you for having me again, David, and
oh, thanks
spending
for coming
time
over. Pleasure.
It's my pleasure. We'll close the show out with a song called TPP. Before we get to that, is there anything else you want to say?
Oh, well, it's I never know what to say with that question, if there's anything else I want to say. Although the thing I always come back to, I guess, is what I think is the most important thing for people to know in general, which is that it's really true historically that the darkest hour is just before the dawn, and everything can change so quickly. And people that should always remember that and never be discouraged, because even when it seems like, and especially when it seems like nothing's, you know, really happening that needs to happen, that can change very quickly in a big and wonderful way all of a sudden. And keep doing what you're doing. You never know when it's going to suddenly start holding traction. You know, people forming cooperatives and going back to the land and living together and doing these kinds, even having babies, having families, co-housing, all sorts of different things, I've seen repeatedly be the aftermath of lots of different social movements. Like when the social movement kind of, you know, runs its course or falls apart or whatever, you'll see a lot of the people who had been involved with it doing this kind of thing, getting land or forming a cooperative or having a bunch of kids or whatever. But and that's definitely one of the, you know, things that one of the various sort of eddies that results from any kind of social movement that I've seen. But another thing that is hard to overstate is before Occupy Wall Street, the corporate press pretty much avoided almost all talk about the division of wealth between the haves and the have-nots in this country. And during and since Occupy Wall Street, talking about the division of wealth is now it's required pretty much for most journalistic entities, even though they're owned by corporations that really would rather not be talking about this stuff. It's now, you know, it's something they know they have to talk about. And terms like the 99% and the 1% are commonly used terms that were far less common before Occupy.
That's very true. And even the president told us that he would be devoting the last 2.5 years of his presidency toward income inequality, wealth inequality, and that type of thing. And yeah, you're right, I'm not here to cheerlead for him, but yeah. I guess my point is that he is even forced to talk about
it. Oh yeah, definitely.
And that's important to understand. Big that time. The conversation has been shifted. And another kind of direction that the conversation has been shifted is sort of challenging these NAFTA-like programs such as the TPP.
Yeah, that's why I say he's lying, because you can't talk about doing anything about income inequality and stuff like that while you're promoting free trade bills that are going to make everything worse for the working class and everything even better for the rich. You know, that's what these bills do. That's what NAFTA did. That's what CAFTA did. It's also intimately related to why we're seeing this influx of refugees on our borders and, you know, because of these free trade bills, along with supporting dictatorships and overthrowing democracies at every possible turn, which has been our country's foreign policy ever since it's existed.
Yeah. So let's close out the show. I want to thank you again for having me, and we'll close out with a song from your new album, which is available for free download at David Rovics. That's DavidRovics.com. David gives away all of his music in hopes that you'll hear it, and is available for house shows around the world.
Indeed. And even shows in other places, too.
Thanks again, David.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Free traders and traitors, bankers and thieves are at it once again. WTO just didn't cut it, so now there's no telling when they'll pass this latest treaty from behind closed doors and win another battle in the transnational class wars. They want fast-track authority so they can get the job done right, by which they mean no discussion, don't even pretend to put up a fight, as they take from us our government's ability to regulate what happens within the borders of what they used to call the state. What they used to call democracy, the idea that people have a say in whether we should be building windmills or fracking our lives away, whether banking regulations are a good idea or not, whether the food on your kitchen table comes from a Monsanto plot, whether the poor should die or have affordable medication, whether human life is less important than your corporation, whether this world is a commons or just a free trade bill that we need about as much as we need another oil spill. So let's do like we do in the WC and flush the TPP. And they've said it all before, like when they implemented NAFTA in 1994. The U.S. lost 1 million jobs, of this there is no doubt. And in Mexico, small farmers were almost completely wiped out. And
And when the refugees started streaming in, they were treated just like tools in the great game of the oligarchs, the old divide and rule. Just like J.P. Morgan said, why worry, he laughed, when I can pay half the working class to kill the other half. So let's do like we do in the WCN. Flush the TPP. SOPA, PIPA, ACTA, they couldn't get them passed. So now they've snuck them all into TPP. Try running that one up the mast. In the back room, no one knows which corporation speaks, except when secret documents get sent to WikiLeaks. And it's only from the whistleblowers we even know it's there. One for Asia, one for Europe. Free trade everywhere. Free trade, free pollution, freedom for the billionaires. Enslavement for the rest of us, but hey, they got theirs. So let's do like we do in the WCN. Flush the TPP. Let's do like